Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 221. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Khalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing good. It's been a couple weeks of slow news after a lot of really big news. And what's nice is that it feels like it's almost like a gradual ramp up in news increase. Mm-hmm. So we didn't even do a show last week because not that much happened. And this week we have like what feels like a mid-tier podcast news story. And maybe next week some giant enterprise will get irrevocably cyber attacked. Hope not, but maybe that'll be next week.
Yeah, it feels like there's been a lull in high profile attacks since MGM and Caesars, unfortunately, which were hit with massive ransomware attacks, took up mm-hmm. a lot of cybersecurity news coverage. What we're talking about today is kind of interesting. It's not the, I hate using the term sexy in reference to news.
Sure.
But it's not the sexiest story, DDoS attacks. DDoS is typically seen as sort of a nuisance, but not, you know, high on the priority list of security professionals, CISOs, et cetera, mm-hmm. But the game has changed a bit in the past couple months because there is a new attack, a new threat vector, a new vulnerability that have come into play that have produced, you know, we always go through record-setting DDoS attacks and, you know, I just kind of see reports of this, like so-and-so stopped a record-setting DDoS attack. Or this is a new record-setting DDoS attack. And you look at the numbers and the numbers are generated different ways and so on and so forth. But these recent attacks, they're really enormous, like eye-poppingly enormous. And you wrote about this situation for us, Alex. Why don't you sort of recap the situation here?
Yes. So three of the biggest cloud providers at once as part of a coordinated disclosure on Tuesday, they sort of published blog posts and advisories about this series of attacks that they referred to as Rapid Reset, which are DDoS attacks sort of attributed to unknown threat actors that exploit the HTTP2 protocol, which is the standardized set of rules for file transference over the internet. This is it's not the latest one. I think there's HTTP3 out there, but it is the current standard one.
Right.
And this came out in, like, I think 2014, 2015, 2016. You can go to the article if you want more nitty gritty details of it. But what makes this worth writing about compared to other DDoS attacks is that according to at least CrowdStrike and Google, and maybe AWS mentioned this too in their blog posts, this seems to be the largest DDoS campaign ever. And when it peaked in August, it would apparently qualify for the largest DDoS attack ever. Now the three vendors who sort of did this, Google, AWS, Cloudflare, they all varied in how many requests they detected being processed. Mm-hmm. I think AWS was maybe like 150 million at once. Cloudflare, it was like 200 million. And then Google was maybe 300 million.
Yeah.
Requests per second.
Yeah. Google had the largest number, I think, observed, 398 million requests per second.
Yep. And to put this in a little bit of context, Cloudflare said in their post that their 210 million tracked version of this was three times greater than their previous DDoS largest attack ever on record, which was about 70, 80 million, I believe. So that's sort of what makes it notable. The attack technique is also fairly novel, because it sort of exploits the HTTP2 protocol in a new way. It seems like all of the vendors in their own way ultimately stopped these attacks. I think Google and Amazon, it was fairly automatic on their end using the stuff they already built in. And Cloudflare saw spikes in requests and 502s and all that stuff, but ultimately did stop it within, it seems like a matter of days, they sort of got it under control. So it's actually a complimentary story to the vendors that ultimately stopped it. And it seems like long term, the way that this sort of attack vector is going to be stopped is the web hosting providers, the smaller vendors that exist sort of below AWS, Google and Cloudflare, they're going to be publishing patches, and a lot of vendors already did alongside this coordinated disclosure. It seems like it was a fairly industry-wide effort, or at least among a large number of players. And we can get a little bit more into the technical stuff, but I figure we would just start there as the broader overview.
Yeah, no, that's a good place to start. So, you know, when this first popped up Tuesday morning, mm-hmm. I thought, well, this makes a lot of sense because we had been seeing a fair amount of layer 7 DDoS attacks of late that, you know, had taken down some pretty big targets. I mean, earlier this year, I think it was June, that was when Microsoft came out and said, you know, all those disruptions, people having trouble accessing Microsoft 365 or like cloud services, Azure, whatever. Oh yeah, that was a DDoS attack. You think DDoS attack against a company like Microsoft, which has a lot of resources, must be pretty powerful. And apparently it was. But then, you know, you start reading these blog posts, Google, Cloudflare, AWS, and you see that these specific rapid reset attacks had only, I guess, according to the disclosures here in the blog post that they penned collectively, I think they said between August and this month, October, right?
Yeah.
So there were already a number of really powerful DDoS attacks coming, especially at layer 7, and, you know, disrupting web apps and cloud apps and at the application layer. And now this happens. And I was like, I'm looking at this saying, oh, this is pretty bad. So those previous attacks didn't have anything to do with this flaw. CVE 2023-44487.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little disconcerting to read.
Sure.
And I thought it was also interesting too, Alex. So the way that this flaw works, the protocol basically is being used against itself. It's being abused. There's a feature in there. It's not a bug per se that they basically designed this protocol way back when to speed things up. And if I have this right, the attackers just found a way to take that feature and use it to speed up their attacks, to create basically, you know, grease the gears and produce even more requests faster for larger DDoS attacks. And that has something to do with, I guess, the way they changed requests for HTTP2, if I have that correct.
I'm gonna read a couple quotes here just from the story, because I think it will expeditiously sort of clarify this.
When in doubt, quote the experts.
Mm-hmm. All right. a primary design goal of, this is from Google's technical breakdown. Mm-hmm. A primary design goal of HTTP2 is efficiency, and unfortunately, the features that make HTTP2 more efficient for legitimate clients can also be used to make DDoS attacks more efficient. HTTP2 attacks are dominant, Google said, because of the protocol's ability to process requests as multiple concurrent streams rather than as HTTP 1.1's need to process requests serially, basically meaning that it's much more efficient at processing requests and can process more requests at the same time is I believe, sort of the simple way of phrasing it. And with rapid reset, the attacking client opens a large number of streams at once in the standard HTTP2 attack, but rather than waiting for a response to each request stream from the server or proxy, the client cancels each request immediately. So it's sort of like maybe the way it was going before was they would just keep doing requests, but then maybe the attackers realize if you do the requests and cancel the requests, it actually loads the severity of the requests even more. I don't know. I feel like I'm a little out of my technical depth here describing this. This was a very complicated one to write.
No, submitting and then quickly canceling requests have been a tactic for a while, but it looks, from what I understand, it looks like this CVE, there's a fly in the ointment. There's a vulnerability where these attackers are able to do it that much better and that much faster through HTTP2. That's not good. And I want to read something from Cloudflare's What a Cloudflare's blog posts, because they put this in further context, because it's not just the number of requests. Like, let's say Google, you know, those 398 million requests per second, that's enormous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of compute power out there. There's huge. I mean, we're fortunate that no one has sort of fully co-opted a data center or cloud provider even, and just use that compute power to just, you know, bring down large swaths of, a country's internet. Although that does happen in some authoritarian nations, happens quite frequently. But in this case, what is really interesting to me is that they think, according to their observations, that this was done with like relatively little compute power.
Mm-hmm.
So Cloudflare writes, quote, "Concerning is the fact that the attacker was able to generate such an attack with a botnet of merely 20,000 machines. There are botnets today that are made up of hundreds of thousands or millions of machines, given that the entire web typically sees only between 1 to 3 billion requests per second. It's not inconceivable that using this method could focus an entire web's worth of requests on a small number of targets," end quote. That's not good. I mean, that really puts it in perspective what we're talking about here, that a threat actor or threat group was able to just have a kind of a small botnet. I mean, that's small potatoes. Like, I'm not talking smack to the threat actor out there, but like, let's just be real. Like, 20,000 machines is not a lot compared to some of the botnets, some of the larger botnets that we've seen. Certainly, you go back almost 10 years now. Well, not quite 10 years. Maybe I shouldn't date myself more than necessary. 6-7 years.
Sure.
I guess with the Mirai botnet and how that took shape and the number of devices that, you know, were used for that. I mean, the Mirai botnet, I think most people are familiar with it, but, you know, this goes back several years to a couple of younger individuals, gamers, that were trying to find a way to take down, I think, if I remember correctly, Minecraft servers, competing Minecraft servers. And they found a very clever but almost obvious way to do that by going after IoT devices, dumb IoT devices with hard-coded passwords or default passwords that were still in place, and compromising those devices and using their relatively small compute power to build a pretty significant botnet that was able to really do some heavy damage. And, you know, we wrote a lot years ago about the Mirai botnet, about the individuals that created it, how they, you know, weren't intending it to be used for super malicious DDoS attacks and, you know, DDoS attacks on the very fabric of the internet in this country. But it was, it got out of control. Other people got a hold of the Mirai botnet code, and, you know, there were Mirai botnet variants and all sorts of problems created through that. This really is chilling because, you know, this is a vulnerability. This isn't code. This isn't, you know, I assume based on what Google and others have written that someone could find a way to exploit that CVE and do similar attacks at that scale. And like Cloudflare said, what if you had a hundreds of thousands or several millions of machines? You know, what would that attack look like? And how would even like a Google or a Cloudflare or an AWS, the biggest cloud provider around, how would they be able to deal with that attack and mitigate it? And the mitigation stuff, I mean, we talked about this offline while we were reading all the material coming out on Tuesday, Alex. It's kind of complicated. It seems like there's a number of ways to sort of, you know, you mentioned the patches, the web servers, the, you know, the vendors out there, they obviously have to patch this, but, you know, the cloud providers and the DDoS mitigation firms, like, they have to do stuff too. And it's kind of complicated. And I don't know how you felt reading that stuff and trying to get a sense of the best ways to mitigate and defend against this stuff. But I was left kind of feeling a little unnerved. And like, I mean, I think at one point Microsoft, you know, in their Patch Tuesday, they said that they had patched the CVE for the HTTP2 flaw, but they were very upfront. They're like, "Hey, we changed our mitigations, and you know I have it right in front of me. I can say, I can quote quote Microsoft hardened layer 7 protections in our web service implementations and patch services to better protect customers from the impact of these DDoS attacks. While these tools and techniques are highly effective at mitigating the majority of disruptions, Microsoft consistently reviews the performance of its hardening capabilities and incorporates learnings into refining and improving their effectiveness," end quote. Basically, that says, hey, we're doing all we can. There's no guarantees. So what was your takeaway, like reading about the mitigations and what these different companies were doing?
I agree with you that the mitigations seemed fairly complex, but I think there's a couple things to keep in mind. The first is that we're talking about DDoS attacks. It's not, no one's going to get ransomware or have their business compromised as a result of this, which isn't to say DDoS attacks can't be complex and difficult and disrupt businesses, but the scope of damage appears to be in a different league, at least for now. I mean, if it was the type of thing where anyone could scale up and then unleash these disrupting attacks at any time constantly to anyone, maybe. But that's the first thing. The second thing is I think Amazon was the one, it was AWS who told me that they sort of expect that as patches become more commonplace on the provider side, and we saw some come out from F5, Apple, The Swift, that Thatch got a patch, and then some smaller stuff did too. What AWS sort of told me was that they sort of expect that as more and more vendors relevant to this sort of thing patch and apply mitigations on their end, that they expect this to become less of a problem. And so it's the type of thing where maybe it could take some weeks or months for this to no longer be an issue, or maybe sooner or longer. But I also think that Microsoft is able to use that language because it's not like this is Log4Shell or anything. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It makes me feel a little better.
Good.
Although I still think there's an issue here with, well, I guess it's twofold. One, I think it was Google, and I have it right here in front of me. In one of their blog posts, they were talking about, okay, we know what the problem is. How do we mitigate it? How do we block it? And they said, you know, simply blocking requests isn't a viable mitigation against this type of attack. And they said, instead, the entire TCP connection needs to be closed when abuse is detected. And they suggested using the go away frame type for HTTP2, which, you know, okay, that's something that you can, you know, you can close that TCP connection. Good. But then they turn around and they say, however, quote, this graceful go away process is not usually implemented in a way that is robust, or which is robust against malicious clients, end quote. So it's like, you can use it, but it's not usually. So my point is, it's like, we're in a place now with this protocol where something was introduced to speed things up and make everybody's life easier because the internet is growing and we have all these applications and services and we need to speed things up, and we sped things up, but inadvertently also sped things up for threat actors. They're looking to take advantage of it. And there's also these things that, well, should help, you know, prevent the abuse and the misuse of this technology, of this protocol, and DDoS attacks like this. But it's not totally up to snuff. It's not totally, you know, so instead we're left with, we have to patch. The web server guys have to patch. You know, Microsoft has to patch, Google, etc. And you've got to rethink your DDoS mitigation and defense approaches. You have to be, I mean, basically they're saying, like, you have to be quicker to detect abuse of this nature and stop it before it gets really out of hand. What if you're just one of many customers using these top tier mitigation services from a Google or a Cloudflare, and they're all getting hit at once by a major botnet? Well, now we're really in trouble. And what good is the go away frame for something like that? You know, I mean, so I do feel a little better about what, you know, you referencing what AWS talked about, because I think that's good. I mean, there's coordinated disclosure here, and these vendors know what the issue is and what's going on, and they've identified the problem, and software vendors and providers are already pushing out patches, and good. And they're reviewing their defenses, and that's good. But then you look at, you know, when I look at the big picture here and I look at all this sort of the nitty gritty with this protocol and how it's being abused and what they need to do to stop it, it's still a little unnerving. And just to go back to the second thing I wanted to say, just to go back to what you said, it's not like it's a ransomware attack. Absolutely. I mean, I mentioned at the top of the conversation here in this episode that it's, you know, it's not a major threat compared to even a data breach, quite frankly. It's a nuisance. But I will say, I know that some of those Mirai attacks took down internet infrastructure for several days and caused major headaches and major loss of revenue in some cases for some organizations. And I was talking with someone recently. I take that back. I've talked with several people recently going back to Black Hat this year, where, you know, DDoS has come up, and I kind of, you know, thought, all right, well, you know, is it that big of a deal? I know there's layer seven attacks. It's powerful. And a few people have said, no, we're taking this very seriously, because these are new types of attacks. And let's say, like, let's just say you're a bank and you do a lot of online banking, or you're any type of e-commerce organization, and you require, like, that you can't have downtime or your whole business model is basically crushed. What if there is like a 50 million device botnet out there that just focuses all of its, you know, it's like the Death Star, focuses all its power on one target.
Right.
Even something as big as a major e-commerce provider, and just says, we're taking this down for a week, and we're just going to keep it up for several days. You know, what type of lost revenue are we looking at there? Obviously, it depends on the size of the company and how much of their business is tied to online. But I mean, that's major. And that's why a lot of organizations I've heard are taking the layer seven DDoS threats very seriously, even dating back to, like I said, with Microsoft. And if they can hit Microsoft like that and really cause an issue. And now we know this. Now we know that there's this rapid reset vector and this vulnerability that's out there. Things could get even worse. So yeah, it's not ransomware, but, you know, I wonder if we are going to see, I mean, do you think we're going to see the ransomware gangs out there that were doing some of the DDoS stuff to, you know, triple extortion, whatever, multi-tiered extortion attacks? Do you think that we'll start to see them using some of these rapid reset attacks?
Maybe. I feel like I would be a little out of my depth to answer that question. But I don't know. I think it depends with these vulnerabilities, like how fast the vendors get on top of it and so on and so forth. Because I feel like there are plenty of stories of vulnerabilities that we hear about them and it's like, oh, this is a big problem. And then we hear about major attacks from related to a certain vulnerability for weeks or months or years. Log4Shell is sort of an easy example of that. But then there are also flaws where they are kind of a big deal, but we don't hear about a ton of high profile attacks after that point once we write our initial story. So I don't know. I think it's I have no idea. I would also be curious to see what people on the vendor side are saying about triple extortion attacks and how often they're actually being executed nowadays. Because what I always heard was that, like, they happen, but they're kind of niche.
Right.
But maybe with this, if it doesn't get patched enough fast enough, maybe it does become more of a major player. I'm not sure. What do you think?
I think ransomware gangs in particular have shown that they will do anything to create more disruption and more misery. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. I agree with you. I've heard the same thing, read the same things about, you know, companion DDoS attacks being relatively rare with ransomware, or not used to the extent where it's like really a major component, a common component of the threat. But I wonder if that may change if you know that you only need a 20,000 device botnet to create this kind of disruption. I mean, wouldn't surprise me at all. And in fact, I would start to, if I was a CISO, I'd start building that into my incident response plan, because you never know. I mean, what if the ransomware gangs just, you know, continue to pivot more away from actual encryption of data, and just say, we're going to steal your data. And also, we don't even have to encrypt your data. We'll just crash your websites, and you'll be down for several days a week, maybe. You know, something to consider, I would say, for organizations out there. We shall see, of course, but
for sure.
I mean, I guess on the positive side, good for Google, Amazon, Cloudflare for really digging into these attacks, getting together and doing a coordinated disclosure for the CVE, trying to get ahead of it and, you know, improving mitigations and defenses. I mean, I still think it's complicated. I still think there's a lot of moving parts. I have my doubts about how smooth this whole mitigation effort across the industry is going to go over the next few weeks and months, probably, but that's positive. So hats off to them. We're no longer fumbling around in the dark going, why are all these enormous, you know, rapid reset attacks hitting us and how are they doing it? Now we know, you know, and we don't know who was hit and we don't know who did it. I think that's going to be interesting when we find out that. I suspect it's probably not a couple of gamers trying to take down Minecraft servers.
No.
But
I'm curious if this is one of those nation state attacks we've been hearing about in recent months, because not just nation state attacks, but you know who's been particularly busy is China. I feel like when we've heard about nation state attacks in the last few months, China's been sort of the main one we're hearing, and I don't know. It came to mind when sort of writing this story. It's like, oh, I wonder if this is another Chinese APT.
Yeah, no, and it's a good point. And then you also have to consider what's been going on, Russia's invasion with Ukraine and the number of DDoS attacks that have been launched in that conflict, and how much of that we've been seeing over the last, you know, I mean, it's just back and forth. You know, we see disruptions like that all the time now. We'll see. We'll see who's behind this, who came up with it. I'm sure these guys have some idea about what's going on here. And hopefully we'll get more insight to that down the road. So
for sure.
Alex, I appreciate you potting with me about this today. A little technical, but you know, an interesting story for sure. Concerning, like I said.
Anytime.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.